Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. As part of the recent Ontario budget, a 30% cut to the legal aid program was announced. It is cutting jobs by eliminating any job vacancies, attrition, and other methods. It is imposing a hiring freeze, and it is delaying other measures set to be implemented around other resources. The goal is to save $16.6 million. The Association of Community Legal Clinics of Ontario called on Attorney General Carolyn Mulroney to not cut frontline services. So how is the Northumberland Community Legal Centre going to be affected by these changes? Here to answer this and more is Executive Director Lois Cromartie. Welcome, Lois.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. Just a few days after the announcement, you sent out a press release in which you said, "We don't know yet how this apparent cut will affect our local clinic. We will work with our community as the impact on our services become known." It's just about a month later. Have you had a chance to identify the largest impact this is going to have on the center?
Well, we are still waiting for the actual funding announcement to come to us from Legal Aid about what dollar figure we're going to be working with for the 2019-2020 fiscal year that started April 1st. So already we're 1 month and a week into this fiscal year, and we still don't know what our budget is going to be. We're expecting to hear in the next week to 10 days, and at that point in time, we'll have to make some decisions about how we're actually going to deliver services within whatever funding envelope were given by Legal Aid Ontario.
So you're in a new fiscal year, and yet you don't know how much money you're going to have to deliver the services for this current year.
That's true. We're still in limbo waiting for that.
Now, you mentioned that you're waiting to hear from Legal Aid Ontario. Why is that the Ontario government, or are those two separate things? How does the funding work that you would be waiting for that to hear from them?
So the province gives Legal Aid Ontario funding to fund a number of initiatives, including funding legal clinics. So Legal Aid is like the manager of the money for legal aid services in the province of Ontario. Legal Aid funds those traditional things that most people know about. Criminal law certificates, so if you've been charged with a crime and you're financially eligible, you can get a certificate to help you pay for a lawyer to represent you in court. It pays for things like family law, where if you're going through a divorce or separation, you might be or looking for custody or support, you can get a family law certificate to take to a private bar lawyer to help that in that situation. But they also fund community legal clinics. And community legal clinics have been around since 1972 or 73, somewhere in there. There's 72 now across the province. Every geographic region of the province has a legal clinic in it. We have been here since 1991. So we are considered like a third-party agency to Legal Aid because each legal clinic is considered an independent entity. We're run by a local board of directors. We have our own corporation. So Legal Aid funds each legal clinic separately. And the Association of Community Legal Clinics that you mentioned earlier is just an association of those 72 individual entities across the province. So every year, Legal Aid Ontario tells the legal clinics, each one of them, here's your budget for the year. And it's basically divided into sort of two larger categories, personnel and operations. So right now, we don't know what our budget's going to be for this year. By and large, we usually hear those figures fairly soon on in the fiscal year, in past years anyway. But this year is a little different, right? The budget from the province came down in April 16th. And then Legal Aid had to scramble to figure out how are they going to try and make that budget work within their global budget, which includes legal clinics.
So just to step back for a moment then, how much has your budget been in the past?
Our budget is about $550,000 a year.
And in that, now, just so people are really, really clear about this, you do not do real estate law, you don't do family law, you don't do criminal law, you don't do highway traffic acts or small claims court. That's a completely separate entity. And what is it then that you do focus on, just in an overarching vision, not the specifics just yet?
Right. So legal clinics were formed to deal with what's called or considered to be poverty law, those areas of law that a low-income person is likely going to run into trouble with in the course of their existence, and that a private bar lawyer may not have sufficient expertise to deal in. So things like income maintenance, social assistance, housing, workers' compensation, those sorts of things.
So if I was somebody that had a problem with the money I was receiving on the Ontario Works program, and there was some dispute, I might come to you guys and say, hey, I'm having this problem. Would you represent me at a tribunal?
That's right. That's the types of things that we do, yep.
And if I was somebody that was living in an apartment and I was about to be evicted, but I didn't know my rights and I needed help, I would come to you guys.
That's right.
What other, then, if that's the case, so you have a $500,000 a year budget, how many people do you help in Northumberland on that budget?
It's about 4,000 people a year that we would provide assistance to. Not all representation. Some of that is just giving you advice. And legal advice is different than legal information. Legal information is on the internet everywhere you look. But legal advice is applying the law to your particular set of facts and giving you advice about, well, you might want to choose option one or option two or option three, and the reasons why that might be the best choices for you. The representation part comes into play because, you know, there's only really five full-time staff at the legal center. We couldn't possibly represent 4,000 people in all of their various problems in a year. There's just not enough of us to go around. So we have to make a judgment call about, you know, what's the best investment of our time and resources for this particular person. Sometimes we can give you self-help and say, this is the things that you need to do, and we can perhaps draft the forms or write the forms for you, and if you're a sophisticated enough person, you might be able to carry that forward on your own. We determine whether there's merit. Sometimes people come to us and there's nothing that can be done. What has happened to them is a legal process, and maybe there's no remedy to it. So we have to make a choice about our investment of resources and merit and financial eligibility before we actually represent. So we represent in about 350 cases a year, 350, 400 cases a year.
And there's five people. Now, in terms of your staff, what sort of expertise do they bring to the table?
Well, I guess we're looking at, you know, how long have people been there. I've been there since 1991. I was employee one of the Northumberland Community Legal Center. So my expertise is in workers' compensation. I don't know if you know anything about workers' compensation, but it's a very complex piece of legislation, very complex for the injured worker to try and navigate. We only deal with injured workers, not employers. And so there's been four benefit systems since I started in the legal clinic system. You know, I don't know how the average person would ever try and sort that out. So that's my area of expertise.
Just get off that, what for those who may not be familiar with workers' compensation, what are the kinds of things that people come to you with when you're talking about workers' compensation?
Either they've been denied their claim altogether, they've been injured at work, and the Workers' Compensation Board says it's not our issue and we won't pay you, or they've been being paid by workers' compensation and been cut back for some reason, or workers' compensation doesn't recognize all of their areas of injury. You know, you've injured your shoulder, but the board says, I don't recognize your neck or your back injury that happened at the same time, those types of things.
So go on and tell us more about the staff and the kinds of things that you cover.
Right. So my staff lawyer, Sarah Cooling, has been with us since 2002. She has a lot of expertise in the area of criminal injuries compensation, and I'll just mention that because that's one of the areas that this provincial budget is going to dramatically affect in terms of its own piece of legislation. She also has expertise in housing and in disability rights. I have a young lawyer who just started with us last year who's working in the area of employment law. Employment law in terms of wrongful dismissal or termination pay, those sorts of things that you might get into. Maybe you didn't get all your wages paid to you. Maybe you need to file an employment standards claim with the Ministry of Labor. That's the type of work that she does. Her name is Shari Baduri. I have two part-time paralegals, Peter Vance and Marisa Conlon, who both do disability type of work. And I have one other lawyer I know that's more than five, but it's five full-time equivalents. One other lawyer, Daoud Nasir, who does mostly housing work.
So one of the things that came out of the budget announcement was this idea of no longer filling any vacancies. There's a hiring freeze on. They've talked about attrition and other methods of decreasing the number of people on staff. Do you feel any threat to any of the people that you have on staff? Is there a possibility we're going to lose somebody or maybe not get somebody replaced?
Well, definitely, because if our funding is reduced, you know, we have no, you know, administrative fat to cut. You know, we have a very limited operational budget. The rest is personnel. So if they make any sort of significant cut to our budget, something's going to have to give. Either going to have less people or more people working part-time, less hours available to the clients.
So in terms of the demand then versus the number of staff that you have, how do those two things balance out? I mean, if you were to lose somebody, would it mean that there would be less people getting services or would others have to double up? How would you handle that?
Well, I don't know that we have that answer yet. I think we'd have to look to the community and say, well, you know, should we close one day a week and only be open 4 days a week? Would that be the answer? Would it be better to have more people working part-time? But regardless of how you cut the pie, the demand is still coming in the door. The question is then how would you try and service that demand in the best way to serve the most people?
How do you make those kinds of decisions? You mentioned earlier you have a board of directors, do you?
We do, and the board of directors will be the ones who make the ultimate decisions about who goes, who stays, how they want to choose to implement the budget.
And who sits on the board? You don't need to tell me specifically, but what kinds of people sit on the board?
They're community people, so we have people from local community agencies. We have a local lawyer who sits on our board. We have somebody from the Labor Council as a representative. People from educational institutions, a variety of people. We have 10 people, 10 board members altogether.
And they would ultimately make that decision. Now, with these kinds of budget cuts, sometimes governments have said in the past, fundraise. Do you fundraise, or how big a portion of your budget is dedicated to fundraising?
Well, none of our legal aid budget is actually devoted to fundraising, but the board of directors does fundraise on behalf of the joint agency that we're part of. So the Northumberland Community Legal Center is one arm of the Help and Legal Center of Northumberland. So when the board of directors fundraises for that whole organization, you know, we would be part of that. And that may come to it. The board may decide that they need to do more fundraising. They just had an event last week. The Empty Bowls event was for the Help and Legal Center of Northumberland. They may decide that they have to do more fundraising in order to try and meet the demand, depending on the budget cut.
One of the things that is sometimes confusing is the relationship between the Help Center and the legal clinic, the legal center, because I know the two share an office and an address, and we've just mentioned fundraising. There's things that go on between the two. Can you help us distinguish between them, and how separate are they, or how integrated are they?
So there's one corporate board of directors. The Help and Legal Center of Northumberland is one Ontario corporation that's a registered charity. It runs two arms, the Help Center and the Northumberland Community Legal Center. So our mandate is set out in the Legal Aid Services Act. What can the Legal Center do? It's set out in the law, and we're also regulated by the Law Society of Ontario because we are licensees of the Law Society, so lawyers and paralegals have to live by a certain set of rules. But the Law Society also sets out what's not allowed by non-licensees in terms of practice. So the two services by the Help Center and the Legal Center are complementary, but they don't really overlap because what we can do is not something that a non-lawyer can do.
Just for the listener, can you explain what the Help Center does help out with? Because they do some things that are very similar, but not the same.
Not the same. So their primary thing that they're involved in right now, of course, this time of year, is their income tax, their voluntary income tax program, helping people file their income tax returns so they can get the benefits that only are delivered to them through the tax program itself. They run a money management program. They run a literacy and English as a second language program. They have a seniors worker. And they have a housing worker who helps people, you know, find listings for apartments and that sort of thing.
Now, how then do you at any time work together, or how do your services relate to each other at any time, or are they really totally separate but just governed by the overarching body?
Well, in either side, if it's our side on the legal center and we find a client who has that type of need, it's easy enough for us to just take them across to that other side because we're sharing an office space. And the same happens on the other side. So we share clients as each of us are recognizing that there's an issue that the other agency might deal with. And that's the benefit, I guess, of having a joint agency like that, is that you don't have to go across town to get that service. You don't have to wonder, I wonder if somebody else does that. We know because we're together.
Would it also be fair to say that the Help Center is also about advocacy? They have a very public voice. They comment on issues around poverty, housing, mental health services. I know this from doing various interviews. How is that different from your side, which is seems to me to be very legalistic and quite different?
Well, again, I guess they're complementary to me, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's you can advocate, you know, for changes in the law or advocate for programs to continue to exist from the legal side of the world, or you can advocate from the service delivery side of the world. So, and I think those are the two things that work together to give the average person on the street a more complete picture of what's possible to be achieved through advocacy.
And on that note, we're going to take a break for some commercials. I'm talking to Lois Cromartie, Executive Director of the Northumberland Community Legal Center. Please stay tuned to Consider This on Northumberland 89.7 FM, your truly local source for news. There's lots more to come. We'll be right back. Hello, and we're back. This is Consider This Northumberland, and I am your host, Robert Washburn, and you are listening to Northumberland 89.7 FM. My guest today is Lois Cromartie, Executive Director of the Northumberland Community Legal Center, and we're looking at the impact of a major funding cut announced by the Ontario government last month. Lois, when the announcement came out, they talked about cutting, I believe it's in the range of 16... Is it $163 million? Have I got that? Or is it 16.3? I'm sorry.
It's $130 million this year and $164 million by the year 2022.
So according to Legal Aid Ontario, the decrease in service could affect up to 100,000 people across the province. When you hear that number, what are we talking about in terms of impact on people, on services, when they talk like that?
Well, it would cut across the whole spectrum of legal aid services, including in criminal and family law, but also in legal clinics. In legal clinics, as I said, there's 72 clinics across the province. In 2017, legal clinics provided services to over 240,000 people. And that's for your most basic essentials of life, you know, keeping a roof over your head, keeping food on your table. So the cut to budgets across legal aid may deprive somebody of their right to have representation about their liberty. It may deprive people of the right to have representation about whether or not they get custody of their children. For legal clinic clients, it may affect their right to have somebody to represent them, to get them the benefits that they deserve, to keep them from being evicted, to get housing that's in a good standard of maintenance repair. The impact on the ground for the people who are living that, who need that type of service, can be quite devastating.
So, I mean, you know, from the point of view of just anybody listening, I mean, we may know of people who have struggled to have custody of a child and can afford a lawyer, and know how complex and how hard that is. It's. I mean, what you're talking about here is having a situation where there is nobody legal and a feeling that, you know, there's nothing I can do about a situation that I feel extraordinarily passionate about. Or, as you've also mentioned, you know, having a roof over your head. It's one thing to, you know, have the means by which, you know, if the roof's falling in or you need something repaired, you can go out and pay for it. But the people who come to you are obviously people who, you know, may be being evicted, and or the landlord may not be doing anything to help them out, and they could have serious problems. Am I characterizing this correctly?
That's true. In the court system, like in the criminal courts or in the family courts, you know, the unrepresented person is at such a disadvantage. The same way the unrepresented person is at such a disadvantage in the community legal clinic system. the tribunals that we deal with, the, for example, on disability appeals, the rate of success, if you are unrepresented, is about 23%. If you're represented, your rate of success is almost 80%. It's a huge difference, you know, to try and get you the benefits that you deserve. So to the average individual person who's out there on the street who maybe never has had to go to a legal clinic, you know, it may be, you know, just a nice idea or some sort of philosophy that would be nice in an ideal world. But for the people who live that reality, it's a necessity to try and get somewhat of an equal playing field.
Now, when this announcement was made, there was some suggestion that there had been a decrease in the level of service by Legal Aid Ontario and by the services that Legal Aid centers like yours are doing. And there was a number thrown around. And in fact, Premier Doug Ford went on a talk-in radio show and said, and this is a quote from him, that it's more about lawyers and less about clients. He said that on April 22nd at a call-in radio show. When you hear that, how would you respond to him?
Well, I'm not certain what numbers he's looking at. If you actually look at Legal Aid Ontario's annual report for 2017-2018, which is, I think, the report that the government is looking at. Actually, the legal clinic numbers aren't even included in that, so I'm not certain what happened there. But, you know, there's 240,000 people that didn't get counted in that report when you look at the legal aid report. If you look at the Auditor General's report, too, that does actually have some of the community legal clinic numbers in it. And those numbers, again, probably don't capture the entire amount of legal clinic work in the last year because we have just had a change in our data collection system program, and it doesn't count things the same way as it used to. So I don't think there's been a decrease. Hasn't been a decrease at our end of the world coming in the door over here at the Fleming Building in Cobourg, so I'm not certain what numbers the government is looking at.
Can you give us any, do you have any stats over, say, a 3 or 5 year period as to how your numbers have been going up or down?
Well, in 2015, we had about 5,300. In 2016, we had about 4,800. In 2017, which is a shift over from the data collection system, we had about 4,500 people, and last year we had about 4,000. So given the way that it counts things differently, all I can go is by what's coming in the door. We don't feel any less busy, just even though the numbers don't necessarily show that.
So how then can you defend the situation? I mean, if you don't have the numbers to sort of show that there's going on, I mean, it's great that I really appreciate, I don't say it's great, I appreciate very much the argument that you're very, very busy and this is essential work. But if you don't have numbers that show that, you know, the demand for services are increasing, how can you then defend the government saying, well, geez, you know, maybe we shouldn't be spending as much money on this?
Well, if you look at legal aid overall, you know, and I can't speak to the legal aid numbers, the numbers for criminal and family and those sorts of things, that's not something that I can speak to. I think part of the other part of the government's take on legal aid is that the provincial government shouldn't necessarily be the only one funding this, and that the federal government, because they have jurisdiction over criminal law and immigration law, should be bearing more of the load because they are the ones who make those, they have federal jurisdiction over those two pieces of legislation, and therefore the federal government should be paying more of that share. You know, the numbers are the numbers, and I don't know who said that. Was it Mark Twain that said, you know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics? You know, it's one of those things that anybody can turn it either way, depending on what you want to prove.
I know from the Auditor General's report, though, they calculate that there's been a 23% increase in the level of service from 2013 to 2018. And I also know that just in this past, a comparative past from 2018 to 2013, they've served 13,000 more people. And that's just on the on the criminal side side of things. So, I mean, across the province, obviously, there's this need. Now, can you help me understand, too, if I did have a criminal case and I did need legal help, I don't come to you guys. We've talked about this earlier. Where do I go?
You have to call the 1-800 number, the Client Service Center in Toronto. There's a legal aid number, and that 1-800 number will tell you if you're financially eligible and if you're legally eligible, because not every criminal charge carries with it the prospect of going to jail, losing your liberty, and those are, there's sort of a legal eligibility test and a financial eligibility test that is administered through that 1-800 number.
And then what would happen once I was told that I was eligible? What would happen?
You would get a certificate in the mail or electronically that you would be able to take to the lawyer of your choice to represent you. So here in Northumberland County, you'd have to figure out who are the local lawyers who take legal aid for criminal matters, for example.
And how many lawyers do you know, how many lawyers we have in this area that do take that?
That I don't know. That I don't know, because it's not our area of expertise. But if you did happen to come to the legal clinic, I mean, we could help you go through that process. But more importantly, we'd probably also ask you some other questions, because being charged with a crime might also affect your employment. It might also affect your ability to have income. Might also affect your housing. So there's those aspects, that even though you come in with, quote, a criminal law problem that we don't help with, there are other aspects of your life that are impacted by that that we would help with.
Now, in the process, as you've been waiting to hear more details, have you had a chance to talk to our local MPP, David Pacini?
We have tried to get a meeting with him and have been unsuccessful, both my staff, myself, have asked for meetings, and also my board of directors, and we haven't been successful in getting meetings set up.
Is there any particular reason that they've given you as to why they haven't met with you?
Nothing that, other than he's not available.
Okay. So how are you getting this issue out so that people can voice their concerns? I know you've put out a press release, and I know there was a letter to the editor recently, but what are you doing beyond that to get people aware?
All we can do is try and raise it through our networks. You know, the lack of a local media outlet here, a lack of a local newspaper makes it quite challenging, as you can appreciate, I'm sure, from your former life. So it's one of those things that we're trying to send it out through community agencies who might deal with the same type of clients that we have, through our connections with past board members, through our clients, current and former, to see, you know, can they speak up and say to the government, this is the effect that legal aid services have had on my life.
Now, normally when these kinds of issues come up, lawyers tend to be very quiet, judges too. We don't usually see them talking publicly. And yet under this particular piece of legislation, we've seen the Refugee Lawyers Association speak out through publications that law associations put out. We see the Association of Community Legal Aid Clinics, the one that we've spoken about earlier. The Ontario Association of Child Protection Lawyers has spoken out. What does that tell us when lawyers who normally stay fairly quiet talking about their business are speaking out so vocally?
I think it speaks to the access to justice issue, right? It's a complex time that we live in. It's a complex set of laws that we live with every day. And I think the people who work with legal aid clients are really firm believers in the need, the necessity for people to have access to justice. It's not just a polite phrase. It really means something to those clients. And to have the thought that people will go unrepresented or go without legal aid services in this province, you know, we recognize that this is the last province in Canada that has a legal aid clinic system, for example. It's such a vital thing to have. If you look at the other provinces, I don't know what those people do, you know, to try and get their legal needs met. I think it just reflects how important it is to the lawyers who practice in this type of work.
So let's try to bring that down so people maybe understand it a little more viscerally. I mean, if I was somebody that didn't have the means and I've been charged with a crime, I feel I'm innocent, what you're saying to me is that I would have to go and represent myself.
Yep,
and
potentially.
And in my situation, I may not have, you know, a particularly good education or I may not be very articulate in being able to talk. And I know for anybody that's either watched a law show on TV, I mean, you know how the language of a court and how everybody behaves is very, very different. Can you help us better understand the true disadvantage that these people face if you don't have a lawyer? I mean, you said earlier about workers' compensation. If you don't have representation, it was, what, 20-something percent?
Yeah.
And then if you do, it suddenly jumps to 80%. Do we have any similar numbers for that, this kind of thing?
I can't give you for criminal law or family law because it's not something that we practice in. But imagine you're in a courtroom setting where one side has all the knowledge, has all the training, has all the experience, and you're there by yourself, and this is your first time in that forum, and your liberty's at stake, or some other part of your livelihood is at stake if the criminal charge is upheld. You know, that's a tremendous disadvantage on the scales of justice. And the scales of justice, when you look at that icon, the scales are equal. And that assumes that you have an ability that's equal to the other side to get your points across, to understand what are the pitfalls that you should be wary of, how is the best way to present your evidence, all those things. What is the law? What are the legal tests? What do the prior cases tell you about what similar circumstances have happened with other clients or other people in your circumstances? So that's when I said there's legal information that's out there for anybody, but the fact of having legal advice and legal representation, somebody who is knowledgeable, who can apply the law to your fact situation, is invaluable.
Now, one of the groups that was mentioned was refugees, and we haven't talked about this area. Do you get cases involving refugees or temporary foreign workers or that kind of thing?
Those are two different things. We do get some calls about refugee work. It's not something that we practice in our area. We just don't have enough calls to generate enough expertise with us, and so we don't practice that. We would find somebody else that would help them. But we do deal with migrant workers and temporary foreign workers who are here who are maybe having problem getting paid or have been injured on the job and need some help with their workers' compensation.
Now, when you get the refugee calls, I appreciate that you don't deal with them, but what sorts of problems do they call in with?
Mostly about how to get their permanent residence card, for example, or about the refugee process itself. And that's not something, as I say, that we practice in. So we either try and find another community legal clinic who'd be willing to sort of take them. Most legal clinics deal with a geographic area, so we sort of have to call on our neighbors or call on our other colleagues to say, I know this person's in Northumberland, but we don't do this. Would you at least give them some advice about what to deal with that? Or you could try and send them to legal aid, although that's a door that's now been closed until the federal government decides if they're going to pick up more of the funding for that particular issue.
Why would the federal government step in on that particular part but not on the other part, just so for people who may not understand the areas of responsibility?
Well, immigration, that is, who gets into the country, and criminal law, what's a crime in Canada, are both federal jurisdictions. Those are things that are made by Canada itself, not by the provinces. So that's why this particular government has said on the immigration question, the feds need to carry more of that burden or carry all of the burden on immigration in terms of legal aid funding.
So just stepping back a little bit, you mentioned earlier that you've made attempts to get a hold of our MPP, David Pacini, to talk to him, and they've been unsuccessful. Are you going to continue to try and get a hold of him and talk to him about this? Or how do you feel about that?
Yes, I think we have to keep trying to get in contact with him, because I think the on-the-ground effect here affects his constituents. When I was looking at the statistics, they say that there's 90 or 9,000 people living in this county who are below the low-income measure cutoff for Statistics Canada out of a population of 80-something thousand. That's a big percentage. And those people have legal needs that aren't going to be met if that cut goes through.
And as you mentioned earlier, these are not just matters of finance, but also principles of democracy and of fairness.
Correct.
The other thing then, if I'm out there and I'm listening to this and I'm moved in a particular way, what can I do as a resident to maybe take a stand on this or to be activist on it?
Well, there's a couple of things that you can do. Certainly, you know, if you want to contact Mr. Pacini and say to him what you think about the cuts to legal aid, that's terrific. There is actually a website where you can send an email both to Mr. Pacini and also to Doug Ford. It's stoplegalaidcuts.nationbuilder.com that you can go on, and it'll send an email to those two spots to say these are, and you can put your own words in there to say this is what it means to me to try and overturn the cuts to legal aid.
Now, your clients obviously are going to be the ones that most affected. Are there anything being done by your clients in terms of activism in the community to either get the word out so that we understand better or to represent themselves to the government?
Well, we have a petition at the office that people can come and sign. We have Facebook posts, and we're sharing that as widely as we can. So, again, if clients or community members want to call the people in charge, that would be terrific.
If you could sit with the Attorney General, Carolyn Mulroney, and you could wave a magic wand and say, this is what you need to do, what would you advise her to do?
I would ask her to not cut legal aid clinics and to not cut legal aid funding. I think she had a quote at one point that said, every dollar that's not spent on lawyers' fees is going to be a dollar that's available for healthcare and education, and I would ask her to consider what is the cost to not funding legal aid. If you cut legal aid, there will be costs elsewhere, costs in personal lives, personal hardships, but costs to the government. Every person that doesn't have somebody to help them with their eviction process to defend it is another person who's going to be homeless. And we know the effect on, you know, the lack of affordable housing in this community as it is. Do you want more people in that situation, or do you want to try and insert money to level the playing field and try and prevent some of those problems? There have been studies that say that every dollar that's taken out of legal aid budgets costs the government $6 somewhere else. So I would say to her, please don't cut legal clinics and don't cut legal aid funding.
Lois Cromartie, I really appreciate you coming in and talking to us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I wish to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and in Northumberland County. If you have any questions about guests you would like to hear on this show, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com with your ideas. If you have any comments, questions, rants, or raves, please email me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com. Or you can go to my Facebook page, Consider This. Or, if you are on Twitter, you can message me at rwash. I will read out a selection of comments on next week's show. If you would like to listen to this or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week